Columbia Morning on KFRU. We appreciate Chief Ken Burton always giving us an opportunity to visit with him at least once a month during a regularly scheduled time. And for those of you who want to set your calendar to this, it's on the first Thursday of the new month, which happens to be the first day of the new month. Welcome, Chief. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
We're talking about community policing off the air, and I'm going to continue that conversation because I think that when you were on a police force in another state, did you consider yourself doing community policing?
Actually, we did. When I was a police lieutenant in Arlington, Texas, you know, my kind of my baptism was when I had an area where I had some problems with some prostitution, and we went in and we did a sweep, and we did arrested all kinds of prostitutes, arrested Johns and all that. And I was at a community meeting, and I was very busy patting myself on the back. And a lady in the back of the room raises her hand. She says, you know, I'm in bed when all those people are out there. What really bugs me is the graffiti on my fence. And I had an epiphany that, you know, community policing is about asking the community itself what they want to do. And it's different in every neighborhood. You know, in some neighborhoods, it might be that people are parking on football weekends in front of their driveways. In another area of the city, it could be something radically different. So you have to go in and you have to communicate with the citizens that are in that area to find out what it is that's of concern to them, and then do your best to address those issues.
So do you ever feel you can speak personally, or you can speak more generally for police in general and law enforcement officers in general, when something becomes sort of a, I hesitate to use the words buzzword, but in a way it becomes something that is more talked about by a community, do you ever feel like, well, let's step back, understand that we always try to do this, but there are reasons why we cannot do it as a textbook definition would say that you want to have it defined.
Daily.
Yeah.
You know, daily I feel that way because, you know, we've engaged in community policing since I became part of the department here in 2009. You know, by example, the downtown unit we created in 2010, the Douglas Park area, Starsky and Hutch working out there. And now the four strategic plan areas that we're working on across the city. So we do it. We do it to the extent that we can with the resources we're provided. And that's the rub.
It's interesting because the Tribune ran something 2 weeks ago today, and it was talking about officers who were responding to the conversation about this. And I need to find the front page. Police leaders, advocates worry about community policing initiative. I don't know the use of the word worry there. But I think it follows what we're talking about, how you're looking at it and how you're defining that. Where are the two sides meeting and where are they not meeting on this?
I think the biggest obstacle to, you know, engaging in community policing across the city is the funding for it. You know, we got to figure out how to pay for this. I mean, it's all well and good to say let's adopt community policing philosophy, which we already have, by the way, and then finding a way to pay for it is the other issue, because it does require manpower. We've proven that it can work. In the four strategic plan neighborhoods, we've shown that it can have an effect on crime. It has an effect on citizen satisfaction. But having the number of officers available that have the discretionary time to engage in it is another thing altogether.
And you've talked, and you reminded me off the air a moment ago, that ideally an officer's shift would be divided up so that there would be regularly an element of community policing. If I were going to spend a third of my time doing that, is that just being out and seen in my area that I patrol? Is that what I would be doing?
Well, I would think on a typical day shift, for instance, or, you know, there people are out for different reasons. You know, like on Saturdays during the springtime, people are out mowing their lawn. If an officer has the discretionary time that's necessary to engage in community policing, he can see David Lyle out in his front yard mowing his lawn and take the time to get out of the car and go up and introduce himself to David Lyle, and then find out what David Lyle thinks about what's going on in his neighborhood and what's of concern to David Lyle, and then do their best to address those issues. And it does a couple of things for you. You get to know the officers that are working in your area. They get to know you, and they're familiar with what you think is an issue in your neighborhood, and they can help you address it.
I like that, and because you kind of said that a little while ago without that specific of an example, but I like that because you can have neighborhood meetings and you can have community meetings, but if you talk to people who typically would not go to the meeting, you're going to get another perspective. I wouldn't say a better perspective necessarily, but another perspective. Because if I'm outside and somebody stops and says, how do you feel about safety in your community, or what are you concerned about, or what's that is... A to me a that's going to work better for me than, say, show up at 6:30 at such and such place
that's
on
right.
this night.
That's right. And then you get a chance, an opportunity. And I, you know, one of my officers back in Bryan College Station used it one time. We had a particular home that had a lot of people that would come on the weekends, and they'd barbecue outside, and then they'd get noisy, and they'd want to play music late. So this officer had a pretty unique way of approaching it. She came up there. I was riding with her, and we went up there, and the patriarch of the family was pretty upset that the police were bothering him, right? So he comes out there, and his wife in tow, and he says, "What's wrong?" She goes, "I smelled barbecue." And she said, "Are you guys barbecuing?"
It's a police officer that said that, yeah.
And the lady says, "Sure, we're barbecuing. Would you like some?" And we said, "Sure." So we went up there and we had barbecue with them. And then as we were leaving, she turned and she says, "Hey, do me a favor. About 10 o'clock when people start to go to bed, could you turn the stereo down just a little bit so that it doesn't bother your neighbors?" And we walked away. They said, "Sure, no problem, officer." And she solved that problem because she knew what was a concern to the neighborhood and had the time to go out there and do it.
I bet, and I think this would be a safe bet, that things like that happen in police departments like Columbia regularly.
Already. And when the officers have the time, they want to engage. They want to problem solve. You know, that's something that they would like to do because it reduces their workload.
How much of what their training does would teach an officer to do what that officer did down there? Are you taught to say, okay, here's – I mean, that is truly like a – neighborhood resource officer or a neighborhood
beat,
not looking for the worst, but saying we're going to continue to create the best.
Right. And figuring out a way to address the issue that she knew was going to be contentious anyway on the front end, and then taking a completely unorthodox approach to solving the problem.
Chief Ken Burton is our guest. Our phones are open at 442-8255. We're talking about community policing, which... again, will be a conversation or a part of a report on the city council meeting on Monday. In the Tribune article I referred to from 2 weeks ago, John Gordon, assistant police chief, has said that, you know, you have to understand that when funding is tight for something like community policing, in order to do it in places, it's a give and take. You have to give something.
Well, sure. And like we were talking before off air, you know, it's the ideal is to have an officer spend about a third of their time on the actual calls. The second third of their time on the administrative duties related to those calls, and then have one third of their time discretionary. And when you can get a formula like that, you get the number of officers you need to do that, then you can gauge in community policing pretty consistently. It varies by shift, of course. And you know, your overnight shifts, you know, after midnight, you know, that's not much opportunity there except in the convenience stores that are open all night and things like that, and you can still do it. But it's on a much more limited basis. But you have to have the resources available to really engage in it.
Said here that the outreach unit, what would you call, how would you define the outreach unit? What's the outreach unit?
It's exactly what it is. I mean, it is something where we have told those officers they're not a slave to the radio. They're not bound by the radio, so they don't have to answer calls for service, although they do. But they go into the neighborhoods and they do exactly what we've been talking about, and they have the time to do it. And we've proven that it works because the citizens are more satisfied with the services there. Imagine knowing the first name of the officer that works in your neighborhood. And that's what these neighborhoods are experiencing right now.
So with that, then, my question was, as it said in the article, the outreach unit was created only by dissolving the city's traffic unit. And that's because
exactly
of funding.
True.
I wondered about that because we get calls here, and I know that you've heard this in public meetings and probably in other comments that, by golly, we need to bring back the traffic unit, bring back the traffic unit. I'm not sure if I understand what is happening.
Officers have the ability to work traffic. You know, some of them have more time to do it than others. You know, it depends on the shift. But the traffic unit was just simply officers that were dedicated. And it's difficult in a climate like ours, the weather that we're experiencing right now, to find somebody that really wants to go out there and ride a motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
It's a unique person that wants to do it in all kinds of weather. And that's one of the challenges we had, is that, number one, officers don't like writing people tickets, contrary to popular belief. You know, they would rather, you know, help people and do other things. So it takes a special mindset. I was a traffic officer myself for years, and you have to have a certain mindset about it so that you can go out there and be effective. And that mindset is that the only way I'm going to correct errant behavior is with this citation in 99 times out of 100, because either people don't realize what they're doing behind the wheel or they don't care. In both cases, you have to do something to correct the behavior. And that's usually a citation. So the traffic unit mindset is not widespread amongst our police officers. So you have to find people that want to do it, number one, that want to go out there and do it in the weather and suffer through that. And it's, you know, with the newer generation of officers just aren't interested in doing it.
So we don't have something like that now?
No, we had motorcycle officers, if you'll recall. Yeah. We had as many as four at one point. That's all they did was traffic enforcement. And, you know, officers don't want to do that anymore exclusively. They don't mind doing a little of it, mm-hmm. but they don't want to do it exclusively. And so it's harder to find people that want to do it. And, you know, it's not anything we wanted to cut, but we needed officers in the patrol cars to answer 911 calls. And so when push comes to shove, you know, you don't have the officers to dedicate. That's why a lot of people don't realize the eight officers that are assigned to the community outreach unit, eight officers and a sergeant, was a significant cut to patrol. And you know, if you talk to a police officer, they may say they didn't like the community outreach unit. They didn't like the concept. It's not that they didn't like the concept. They didn't like the fact that eight officers were leaving that would be helping them answer calls for service. Mm-hmm. And so it's not that the officers don't support it. It's just that they don't see that we have the resources for it.
Once that the traffic unit and you lost the motorcycle officers whose job was to write citations for traffic violations, did you see much change as far as safety in the community or any statistics that followed up after that that would say, wow, what a big loss, and it made it dangerous to be on the roads more so than other times?
No. Number of citations went down.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that's a natural progression there. The number of citations was reduced. The municipal court noticed it. But other than that, you know, with traffic fatalities and things like that ebb and flow all the time anyway. So we did not notice that much of an impact.
Caller, thank you for calling. You're on KFRU with Chief Burton.
Chief, I've probably talked a couple of times about this traffic division, and I think it's a big mistake because I think that you have a lot of things going on in this city, and I think people are aware that there's not that much traffic enforcement going on. And an example would be the Highway Patrol stopped a vehicle up by Boonville the other day with 100 pounds of marijuana. I would say on traffic stops in Columbia, from what I see, and I'm out it every day on all these different streets, people are just ignoring everything. And you make the citations are down. Well, I know they would be down because nobody's out enforcing people running lights, following too close, changing lanes. And then you mentioned about the officer wants to write tickets. Are you referring to the ones that ride the motorcycles or just the officers in general? Because to me, if they don't want to really take their time to write the tickets and so forth, then I shouldn't be on the force, because that's part of what your duty is when you are sworn in as an officer.
We'll get a reaction. I was thinking of you, caller, when I brought that up, because I know how you feel about traffic unit.
Yeah, and it's not that the officers don't want to enforce their law or do their job. That's I'm sorry if I was misunderstood there. But what I'm talking about is they realize the impact that it has on a driver. You know, the points you lose on your license, the insurance implications, and those kinds of things. So it's not a pleasant thing knowing that you're affecting someone's life like that. And so it's a big deal to them when they write a citation and they realize what the person has to go through. It's the having the time to do it and having the when you're not on 911 calls and having the ability to go out and write it. Yeah, you know, there would be people that would do that. The problem is that we're strapped with the 911 calls and just getting officers to respond to those.
A lot of times people say the traffic stops is where you will be perhaps learning of a bigger crime, like he was insinuating there, might be able to find large stash of drugs or something else that might be a bigger problem than just somebody speeding rolling through a stop
sign. That's correct. Crooks drive cars. Yeah. I mean, that's the bottom line. And you know, to the extent they can, I think that we still make those kinds of stops, you know, when you have a known offender or something going on in a particular area of the city and you make your traffic stops for that. But strictly going out and doing traffic enforcement only, is something that we just don't have the officers to do.
Let's move on to something else then, and let's talk about what was in the media earlier this week, and that is a new way of, I think it's new record-keeping software or perhaps the emergency joint communications way of doing what they do. What's changing in that area?
The joint communications just started with the new CAD system this week. It's computer-assisted dispatch. And it's tied to our records management system because the information that the 911 call taker takes at the 911 center will very soon, it doesn't yet, but will feed into our records management system without the officers having to do it. It takes a step out of it that the officers don't have to mess with. So it's just an upgrade in technology. I don't know what the CAD cost out there because that's 911 that paid for that, but the internal system we've been working on now for probably 6 years, and it's just now coming to fruition. It's a pretty significant expense, over $1 million. But we were actually on an old green screen computer system, if you can still believe that. Mm. And, internally, it was something that was put together back in 1995, and we're upgrading it. It's a Windows-based system that should make everything a lot smoother for the officer. And once we learn it,
yeah, I understand that.
Changing from the old to the new is sometimes painful, and we're seeing some of that.
It'll be a time saver, so
absolutely.
It makes the job easier.
Yes.
And what would it give me an example of what it would do? So, in other words, I don't have to do what now that I been doing?
When I go to write my reports, It's tied together. So I go to write my reports. If David Lyle is the one that called in, that's automatically already there. And so I don't have to type all that stuff in. And so it's a way for the computer to go ahead and transfer the information rather than the human.
Oh, I see. That's pretty cool. Let me move on to something else I saw. Well, let me ask you this, because too often I don't do this early enough, and I'm probably not doing it early enough now. What else is on your mind with the police department right now?
Right now it's the RMS system.
Okay.
We're going through it's touch and go. You know, they flipped the switch on Tuesday. And you don't know if the switch is going to work.
And, it's the same in your business as it is in ours.
Exactly.
That's happened regularly here. We're changing something now. Go.
It was supposed to go at 2:00, and at 2:50, I left the room, and it still had not happened. So it happened shortly after. But but these things take time, and you've got the human element, and you've got the machine element, and all that stuff that comes together. And it is a massive undertaking to switch over these systems. So that's what we're in the middle of right now.
If anybody's been down by the police station downtown, know that the front entrance is unusable right now. How are things going with some of those projects?
We're plugging along. The second story where joint communications used to be has been remodeled, and our detectives have moved in there. It's not completely finished, but it's about 95% finished. And now they're working on patrol on the first floor. We're upgrading the bathrooms and things like that. If you've never been in there, and most people haven't, It's pretty dank and dour down there. So we're getting that stuff done and making it a little bit more palatable for the officers and the people that have to work down there. The records unit is moving as well, and we used salary savings money that we had from a few years ago to do these upgrades. It was actually, if you remember the shooting at the Dallas police in downtown Dallas.
Yes.
There was a lot of concern on the part of officers that we needed to upgrade the security of our building, so we're in the process of doing that as well. So it's kind of a long-term project. We probably have 3 or 4 months to go.
That's a trade-off also, you know?
That's correct.
Adding a security that is making it a little bit safer for the officers, but the access to the general public, which kind of liked that feeling of, well, we can go in there and talk pretty easily.
And actually, that part of it will be a little bit easier for the citizens as well. It's just, you know, something that had to be done. A lot of it was old, hadn't been, you know, fixed or kept up for years and years, and we're trying to make it a little nicer for them down there.
We have time to take your call, caller, so thank you. You're on the air.
Good morning. I missed the earlier part of your show, so maybe you've covered this, but to make up for the shortfall in the funding for police and fire, has the city ever attempted to pass a dedicated tax to the voters, like the Parks and Rec, where people in the city are so afraid that the city doesn't manage the money well? Yes, they want more public safety, but the money will get siphoned off and go. But if it's a dedicated tax, they can't touch it. The council, the city manager, it has to go to police and fire. Have they ever tried? I think it would pass.
Keep listening. Chief, you're going to have this one.
You know, actually, I've seen cities that have done this, you know, back in my previous life. But they're difficult to pass because of the very reasons that you're talking about. But I would advocate for a dedicated tax. It does make sense. And if people know where it's going, maybe they'd be more likely to vote for it. But it was pretty soundly defeated when we went to try to get an increase in the property tax. So I don't know, you know, I think the type of tax is the thing that's the biggest issue. People are concerned about their property taxes and consider that a lifetime, you know, you're taxing their grandchildren is the way they look at it when you say you're going to raise the property tax forever and ever. So I don't know what the answer is. Maybe a dedicated tax, while I would advocate for it, I'm also a citizen here. I realize what it would do to my pocketbook, too. And so I think that's always a major concern to people. I think it's kind of ironic that we have as low a tax rate as we do, and people don't realize how high taxes are in other places. But that's the way they feel, and I respect that. But we're going to have to do something if we're going to improve public safety.
And it is being considered.
It is.
So for the caller, it is considered. I think we have addressed that before. As you said, asking, would you pay more property tax
right.
for this express purpose? And we've spoken on that before.
Right.
But it may come up and be felt differently now. So,
yep.
But it is a consideration that is being done by the administrators of the city. Always appreciate your time.
I always enjoy being here with you.
So. Thank you very much for being here. Chief Ken Burton has been our guest. This is News Talk 1400 KFRU.